If you own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles and have an auto warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all, listen up. CarShield has a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that covers more parts than ever. Visit carshield.com/audio to find out how you could pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Get your free quote today at carshield.com/audio. That's carshield.com/audio.
Welcome back to the Dirr Show. I hope many of you were as moved as I was by the interviews with survivors and people who experienced what happened in the south of Israel when Hamas engaged in the murderous slaughter and rapes and bodily mutilations of other people. And before we get to the main subject of today, which will be the upcoming Trump New York case, I want to spend a few minutes just on Israel again, because the Democrats are beginning to approach my red line. Maybe I should have imposed the red line sooner, but I can tell you what my red line is. If the administration in any way cuts back military aid from Israel, I will no longer be a member of the Democratic Party. I will formally resign in protest and campaign vigorously against the Democratic Party if they do that. At the moment, 50 or so members of the House and 20 or so members of the Senate are urging a cutoff of aid, which would be a death penalty for Western democracy. And it would send a horrible message to our allies all over the world. That remember one thing, Israel has behaved far better in terms of civilians than the United States did and than England did after 9/11. The United States and England caused multiple numbers of civilian casualties. Even the one incident where Israel was clearly at fault, negligently killing the seven workers from the World Kitchen. The United States was worse. In the exit from Afghanistan, it tracked somebody who it thought was a terrorist, much like Israel tracked these three trucks, which they thought would track terrorists. The United States fired a missile, killed the innocent person who turned out to be an aid worker, much like the workers. He wasn't working for a fancy, famous place like World Kitchen, but he was working as an aid worker. He was killed, and his whole family was killed, including many children, real children. I'm not talking about Hamas children, 19-year-olds who fire rockets at Israel who were called children. I'm talking about real kids, you know, 5, 7, 10 years old who had nothing to do with it. And the United States apologized. It was a one-day story. They didn't fire anybody. They hardly made any accounting. And these hypocrites, whether it be Congressman Crow, Congressman Dean went on CNN, looked in the camera. She's from Pennsylvania, and told a deliberate, willful, malicious, blood libel lie. She said that Israel has killed, I forget the number, it was 32 or 33,000 innocent civilians. Even Hamas doesn't claim that. Hamas doesn't distinguish between civilians and terrorists. And we know that at least between 13 and 15,000 of those killed were actual combatants, and probably another 5 to 10,000 were complicitous and were guilty in all respects. It's interesting. I just acquired a letter from Albert Einstein, which could have been written to the good Germans, the good people of Gaza, the innocent adults of Gaza. This is a letter he wrote on September 10th, 1945. That's just, you know, months after VE Day and VJ Day. The war was just over. And he says, the crimes committed by the Germans are horrible. And one hears on every corner of the misery and losses they have intentionally brought over the people. The strangest thing is even the better people among the Germans, remember this, even the better people among the Germans, just substitute the better people among the Gazans, the better people among the Germans are not conscious of their heavy responsibility for all these crimes committed by the government they have chosen themselves. The people of Gaza chose Hamas. They elected Hamas. And then Hamas also engaged in a coup. And so he says the responsibility for all the crimes committed by the government they have chosen themselves, and that the outside world is rather inclined to forget about it. This letter could have been written to the good people, how many there are, we don't know, of Gaza. Remember that the people of Gaza, in a poll, 70% of them completely supported what Hamas did on October 7th. 80% of the Muslims on the West Bank supported that. By the way, a similar percentage in England of Muslims and in the United States in Dearborn, Michigan. Just the other day, there was a demonstration in which Arab and Muslims called for death to America. Of course, death to Israel, but death to America. Many of these people hate America and hate Western values. And what they're doing living in America, I don't know, but they're here. And they have a right of free speech, and we have a right to criticize them for their exercise of free speech. And you get Elizabeth Warren. Let me tell you about Elizabeth Warren. She now favors, she calls what Israel has done genocide, and she favors cutback of aid. When Elizabeth Warren wanted to run for the Senate, she came to see me. We used to have lunch, you know, a couple of times a week. We taught in the same section. She was on the faculty with me probably 25, 30 years. She came to me when she was running for the Senate. She said, "Alan, I don't know anything about the Middle East. Can you tutor me?" And I sat with her and I gave her the history of the Middle East, the history of the Israel-Palestine conflict. Now she's become an expert. Suddenly, she doesn't know anything. She doesn't know what she's talking about. And calling for saying that Israel committed genocide. If Israel committed genocide, obviously the United States committed genocide because it killed 10 times as many people in Afghanistan and Iraq, and obviously in Hiroshima and Nagasaki and Dresden. So here we have a United States senator and various members of Congress essentially accusing the United States of committing genocide because if Israel committed genocide, which of course it didn't do, a fortiori, the United States and England did it because what it did was far, far worse. It killed far, far more civilians. And remember, the fight that the United States and Britain were fighting was thousands of miles away from their borders. There was no direct threat to the United States, whereas Israel is fighting an enemy which is 5 miles away from the kibbutzim and towns that they invaded and murdered all those people. It is such incredible, incredible hypocrisy. So my oath to you, if the United States cuts back on military aid to Israel, if it doesn't go through with its obligation, legal, ethical, moral, to send these F-16 or whatever fighter jets to Israel and denies them the right to protect themselves against Hamas, I will actively campaign against Democratic candidates all over the country. I wait to see what President Biden did. He's had, so far, a mixed record, mostly positive toward Israel, starting on October 7th, 8th, and 9th. And now he's weakening and wobbling. And I have an open mind to see what my attitude toward him will be. But I can tell you, I will not support Democratic senators. I will not support Chuck Schumer. I will not support Elizabeth Warren. I will not support the congresspeople, certainly not AOC and the squad, who hate America as well as hating Israel. So, you know, this is my red line. Maybe I should have pushed the red line further. But the Democratic Party is at risk of becoming the pro-Palestine, anti-Israel, pro-Hamas party. And if it becomes that, it has an enemy in me, and it has an enemy in many others who have long supported the Democratic Party. Democratic Party is committing one of the greatest sins in American political history. It's turning Israel from a bipartisan issue into a partisan issue. Not good for Israel, not good for America, not good for Democrats like me who have been generally loyal to the Democratic Party for so many years. We feel betrayed, and we're not going to take it. You know, if there were an easier candidate to support, on the Republican Party. Many of us would have done it right away, and many of us will do it. And remember, too, that pro-Israel Democrats, Jewish, Christian, we have somewhere to go. We could vote for Bobby Kennedy. Many of us could vote for Donald Trump. We could vote for No Labels if they come up with a candidate. The Muslims, the We Hate America Muslims, you know, Death to America Muslims, where do they have to go? They can't vote for Trump. They believe Trump enacted a Muslim ban. They think that he's against Muslim immigrants. So they have nowhere to go. They could just stay home. And if they stay home, big deal. You know, we're not going to miss them. So we'll see. We'll see what happens. But you have my pledge. I'm not going to support a party that withdraws military aid from Israel. I wanted to mention one more thing before we get to the topic of the day. You saw the headline today that the parents of this horrible young man, boy, who killed the four people in school, got sentenced on this strange new conviction. They're sentenced to 15 to 20 years in prison for negligence, for failing to stop their son from taking the gun to school. Now, there's a problem here, and it's a problem that relates to the Trump case, and I'll relate the two together, even though obviously there's an enormous difference. There's no similarity between the cases substantively, but in both cases, they're making up crimes. There was no crime on the books of failing to make sure that your son doesn't get access to a gun. After all, they're entitled to have a gun. Second Amendment gives them the right to bear arms. And they were negligent and did some awful things and were terrible defendants. They said terrible things at the trial. But there was no crime. Let the legislature pass a crime for the future, saying that parents have an obligation to keep guns away from their young high school age children. And if they don't, here is the punishment for it. But you can't make up a crime. And that's what they did. They stretched the manslaughter statute to cover conduct that was never before thought to cover this kind of negligent omission. Then they sentenced them so excessively. If you're going to do it, if you're going to make up a crime, and the Supreme Court has said this, that there are crimes that you can have for mere negligence and for failure to take action. But generally, they carry relatively small penalties. But the idea of 15 to 20 years, I mean, this case should have carried a one-year sentence or something like that. But because the crime, the substantive crime for which they are not guilty, but their son is, was so heinous that it carried over, obviously. If the son had done exactly the same thing, taken a gun to school and shot at classmates and not killed anybody, the parents would never have been prosecuted, and they would have been just as guilty. So I worry about that. And I worry about the idea of making up crimes, which moves us to the Donald Trump case, because Donald Trump may very well be convicted starting next week. The case will take a while because jury has to be selected. But Donald Trump may very well be convicted of a non-crime. What he is charged with is simply not a crime. It's not a federal crime. It could have been a federal crime. Federal government didn't think it was, and they didn't prosecute him for it. It's not a state crime. And if it's a state crime, it's a misdemeanor. And what the prosecution did is they cobbled together a federal crime, which wasn't really a crime, a state crime, which isn't a crime, and they created what I call the Alexander Hamilton crime. Remember, Alexander Hamilton paid hush money to Mrs. Reynolds to make sure that she didn't disclose their consensual affair, exactly the same as the Donald Trump situation. And I doubt that Alexander Hamilton put that on his forms. After all, he was the Secretary of Treasury. But nobody in American history has ever been charged with failing to disclose hush money payments on a corporate or even a government form. The idea that you can have a criminal prosecution based on that is so dangerous and so preposterous. We know that the DA of Manhattan set out to get Trump. We know that. He said it. And And indeed, after the federal government refused to prosecute, his office refused to prosecute, saying there was no crime. Then people in the office started screaming, get Trump, get Trump, get Trump. You promised to get Trump, get Trump. Come up with something, find something. And they couldn't find anything. So they made it up. They manufactured it. Now they're rushing into trial to make sure they get a down and dirty conviction before the election, even though it's likely, if there is a conviction, that it might very well be reversed on appeal. But the trial won't go forward for a while. And the big issue now is whether this judge, who's compromised by his daughter's deep involvement in Democratic politics, his daughter will benefit financially, I'm sure, from a Trump conviction in terms of fundraising. Now the question is, will this judge do the right thing in terms of allowing the Trump lawyers to get a fair jury? The presumption is against a fair jury. 85% of the people in the jury pool probably hate Donald Trump. They probably voted against him. Many will do anything to convict him. There are others who just want to be on a Trump jury. They want to be able to say to their friends and neighbors, I convicted Trump. I stopped him from being president. I sent him to jail. Me, I'm a juror. You're going to get a lot of jurors who want to do that. And so they're going to lie. Jurors lie all the time. I've had many, many cases where we could prove after the fact that jurors lied. Mostly the courts don't care, but they should. Juries lie all the time. They lie for two reasons. They lie to get on juries that they want to get on and to get off juries they want to get off. A funny story involving me. When my first popular book, The Best Defense, came out, somebody walked into court carrying it, immediately got bumped from the jury. So the word got around, if you don't want to serve on a jury, buy Dershowitz's book and bring it with you to court. Joke, but that really did happen. And I've been involved in jury selection issues where we know juries lie through their teeth. Nobody ever prosecutes a juror for lying once in a while. That does happen, but it's very, very rare. And it mostly happens when it hurts the prosecution, not when it hurts the defense. So the judge should be able to probe very deeply into these juries' feelings. Now, will the judge allow them to ask who you voted for? Well, I think that would be relevant. Can you really get 12 jurors and 6 alternates who don't have an opinion on Donald Trump? Can you find 12 people in America who don't have an opinion on Donald Trump? You know, juries say all the time, oh, well, I could do fair. I could be fair. I could put my biases aside. No, you can't. You can't put your biases aside. If you have deep felt biases, they're going to influence the outcome of the case, whether consciously or unconsciously. And that's why judges have to be scrupulous about allowing the defense attorney. Forget about the prosecution. Prosecution is going to get its jury. You know, if you have a jury pool that starts 85% hating the defendant, I'm not worried about you getting a fair trial. Indeed, the trial should never have been held in Manhattan. Should have been held in Staten Island. Should have been held in Rockland County. It could have been held in so many different places. The one place it should not be held in is Manhattan. And yet the courts have allowed it to be held in Manhattan, which puts doubts in my mind about the fairness of appellate courts as well when Trump is involved in a case. So what are you going to find? Which 18 people are you going to find who you'll be able to say have absolutely no bias, no prejudice against the defendant? Forget about in favor of the defendant. That's not a concern here. The presumption is that everybody on that jury will be against the defendant. It will be in favor of, and in favor of the prosecution. If you vote against somebody, it almost automatically follows that you have a bias against them. And Donald Trump isn't an ordinary candidate. People either love him or hate him. Is anybody you know neutral about Donald Trump? Has anybody ever said, well, you know, on the one hand or on the other hand, there's Trump's benefits, there's his disadvantages? I've said that myself, but how few people actually weigh the costs, the benefits of Donald Trump, the good, the bad of Donald Trump? Most people I know don't. Either he is the greatest president in the history of the world or the worst president in the history of the world. Very few people have a nuanced or intermediate position about Donald Trump. And so there's going to be, obviously, some ethnic decisions. People are going to base decisions on race, on religion, whether or not you disqualify people. Under the law, you can't disqualify people based purely on race or gender or religion. Who knows whether or not they're being disqualified for that reason. Remember, too, that both the prosecution and the defense have peremptory challenges. That is, there are a number of challenges that they don't have to give a reason for. And it used to be they can use those challenges for any reason whatsoever. But the Supreme Court has now held you can't use it on a racial ground. You can't use it to get rid of all blacks on a jury or to get rid of all Jews on a jury or to get rid of all men or women or whatever on a jury. You can't do that. And so if you're going to get rid of a lot of people of a particular type, you have to come up with a rationale. And I've heard some of the weakest rationales that prosecutors particularly have come up with. But defense attorneys can't either. They're precluded, even though there's a real question about whether or not the Constitution applies to defendants and defense attorneys who are private parties as distinguished from the government. But the courts have held, yes, it does. And so it's going to be interesting. I don't know whether we're going to see it on television. We should, but it'd be interesting to see whether jury selection is on television. And the trial should surely be on television. The States public should be able to see how their legal system is being distorted in the interest of Get Trump. And, you know we have data on this. In the O.J. Simpson case, for example, people who didn't see the trial on television, or every minute of that trial was on television, people who didn't see the trial on television were shocked by the verdict. People who saw the trial every day, who followed it, were not surprised. They understood that there was evidence of tampering with evidence not reported by the press. So the average person who didn't see the trial wouldn't know that. But if you were at the trial, as I was, and deeply involved in the process of exposing the tampering, in that case, it was a bloody sock, which had the blood of the victim and the blood of the defendant. What could be better? But it was a made-up piece of evidence. Officer Van Atter simply poured from a test tube the blood of O.J. Simpson and the victim on the sock, and the proof was the blood had EDTA in it, which is not found in the human body, but found in test tubes. It's put there as an anticoagulant, and Van Atter was stupid. He didn't know that there was a scientific way in which he would be caught tampering with the evidence. And the jury saw that. And the jury said, gee, if we can't trust one piece of evidence, how can we trust the mountain of evidence that we've seen? Right? Verdict, wrong verdict, up to you. But the reason for the verdict was that the prosecution, the police were caught tampering with evidence. And so, you know, we have a situation here where we have to see what kind of a jury we can get. There are jury consultants, I'm sure, on both sides, and they will advise the defense attorney as to what kind of questions to ask, what kind of jury they would prefer. They may also have already had mock juries. What you do if you're a good defense attorney is you create a mock jury that replicates as closely as possible the jury you have in the case. Usually you don't do it until after the jury is selected, and then you test some of the evidence, some of the questioning in front of the mock jury and see how they react. And you know, you hope, you expect, it's not always perfect, that the real jury will react in a similar way. So if you have two approaches to a case, you try them both on the mock jury and you use the one that seems to produce the result you most were anxious to achieve. So we'll see what happens in that case. And but this is a scandal. This is a terrible, terrible case. I've said this before. In 60 years of practicing criminal law, I've never seen a weaker case. If you listen to CNN, you think it's the strongest case in the world. You have their experts saying, wow, this is a really strong case. It has a witness named Cohen. Yeah. If they have to rely on Cohen, who was Trump's obviously lawyer and assistant, they really do have a problem because he has, you know, he's been convicted and he has all kinds of problems. But again, it depends on the 12 jurors and that depends on the judge. So we'll see whether the judge has been influenced by his daughter. We'll see whether the judge has been influenced by his own political preferences. will see it very well during the jury selection process, and I'll follow it very carefully, and I'll report on it on an ongoing basis. Okay, so let's look at some letters. Okay, this is one I hate to read, but I have to. This is a letter I got this morning. Yeah. You are a worthless Jewish scumbag. Your endless denial of everything and anything that your monstrous, disgusting fellow Jews have done in the world is appalling. I look forward to the day you make the news for your demise. You are a true piece of SH, okay. With the path that your beloved Israel is going in the world, by the time your time is up, the only thing people will remember about you is that you were proud to stand with the worst nationality on the face of the earth. You subhumans would make Hitler blush. Rotten hell, you piece of garbage. This is what we're faced with. There are many, many Americans who feel the same way, who just to their core hate anything Jewish, hate me because I'm a Jew, hate Israel because it's the nation state of the Jewish people. I'm not suggesting that the senators and the congressmen who seem to hate Israel, and many of them do, they always start by saying, we're supportive of Israel, we just don't want to have any weapons to defend themselves. Or they'll start by saying, well, we're appalled by what Hamas did, but no, there's no but. You're appalled by what Hamas did and Hamas must be destroyed. There's no but there. But this letter strongly suggests the depth of the bias against Israel and against the nation state of the Jewish people. Remember, too, that much of the anti-Semitism that we saw did not start after Israel sent troops into Gaza. It started on October 7th, on October 8th, the National Lawyers Guild, 33 groups at Harvard, people like this guy, Chris, who wrote me this letter. These are people who hate everything that has to do with being Jewish. And what's going on in Gaza today is an excuse. And the way the media is reporting it, let me make two points again. I've made it over and over again. There is no famine in Gaza, period. It's a lie. There is no famine. There is some hunger. There is no death caused by malnutrition. What happened is there are some people who died from pre-existing diseases. And if they weren't fed, why didn't their parents feed them? There's plenty of food and plenty of water to be fed. Hamas is stealing much of the food, much of the water. People are not having three meals a day, but they're having a meal or two a day. Nobody is starving. It's just a lie, number one. Number two, thousands and thousands of children and innocent civilians are not being killed. It's a lie. The vast majority of people who have been killed, and it's not 33,000 or 32,000 or even 25,000, it's below that. The vast majority of them are actual terrorists, people who are complicit with terrorists, people who have been killed by Hamas itself, by their rockets and Islamic Jihad, or people who voted for the Germans, the good Germans that Albert Einstein was talking about. And so this notion of these, you know, you get the picture you hear of the media somehow of all these babies and these totally innocent people being killed. When the war is over, we'll see. But I'll bet you that the number of actual babies who have been killed is minimal, very, very small amount. Any baby that's killed is too much, but it's because they're being used as human shields. But the lies that we hear now are just horrible. And the letters. One final letter. I hope that when you met with Bibi Netanyahu and told him that Israel is losing the propaganda part of the war and they need to do something. Yeah. They need to do something. They need to win the war. That's what they need to do. They need to wipe out Hamas, and they need to fight against anti-Semitism, but they need not to compromise their ability to destroy Hamas by doing the right thing. They're doing the right thing. Israel is fighting the most moral war with the least number of civilians in proportion to combatants of any country in history. I challenge anybody to dispute those figures. You're going to see when this war is over and when finally there is a complete analysis and evaluation that you have been misled, that Israel has fought this war cleanly with a great effort to try to avoid civilian casualties, and that the vast majority of civilian casualties result from Hamas using human shields. I put my reputation behind that. I know of what I speak. I have written many books on the issue of fighting terrorism. I've been to Israel over 100 times. I know what I'm talking about, and I'm convinced that what you read in the New York Times, what you see on CNN, and what you hear from these anti-Israel members of Congress, Crow, Dean, AOC, Warren, are lies. See you tomorrow.
Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a Swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.